Welcome to the Creating Wealth Show with Jason Hartman. You're about to learn a new slant on investing, some exciting techniques, and fresh new approaches to the world's most historically proven asset class that will enable you to create more wealth and freedom than you ever thought possible. Jason is a genuine self-made multimillionaire who's actually been there and done it. He's a successful investor, lender, developer, and entrepreneur who's owned properties in 11 states, had hundreds of tenants, and been involved in thousands of real estate transactions. This program will help you follow in Jason's footsteps on the road to your financial independence day. You really can do it. And now, here's your host, Jason Hartman, with the complete solution for real estate investors.
Welcome to episode 1510. This is a 10th episode show, and we've got a guest who's awesome, and he's becoming a regular, and that is Dan Millman, the author of so many books, including The Way of the Peaceful Warrior, which was made into a fantastic movie, by the way. Usually people say, oh, the book was better, right? Well, this one, you know, the book is great, and so is the movie. But today we're not going to be talking about the peaceful warrior. We are going to be talking about the loneliness epidemic. Yes, it is a very sad thing, and it is a big concern. And even prior to COVID, that's not all we're talking about, by the way, but it's definitely part of the conversation because I thought Dan would be a really good expert to discuss this, something I've been thinking about a lot lately. And, you know, that was a problem before COVID-19, but now it is even more and more pronounced. And I think that's going to get even worse and more significant. So we will dive into these topics here in a moment. But, you know, just remember when you meet people in life and interact with people, you never really know what they're going through. Everybody has their own set of battles and their own situation and their own things that they're going through. So always try to be mindful of that. Of course, we as good people want to be mindful of that. So that's what we should do. And hopefully this show will help us in a small way do that. But before we get to the 10th episode topic, something where we talk about something of general interest for anybody who's new to the show, that's what we do on every show that ends with a zero. We talk about something of general interest, not our usual financial and investing topics. But in the intro portion, I always seem to have something to bring up that relates to investing and finance, and today is no exception. So just a quickie here for you. You know, we look at housing starts, we look at building permits, and the activity is pretty interesting. And I am looking at four different charts here, which I wanted to bring to you. Of course, I can't really bring this to you when it's a chart. I've just got to talk about it conceptually because you can't see it visually here on the audio, but you can watch us on our live streams and on YouTube. And by the way, I have to tell you something. We were so upset yesterday. We were doing this great live stream session. Thank you to our clients, David and Gina, who joined us. And thank you to investment counselor Sarah, who was on with me. And we wondered why we didn't have that many people. We were trying a new time. And, you know, it was only our second live stream. So it's not like we're experienced at this. We are amateurs, amateurs. But we were doing that and we thought, you know, there just aren't many people on this. Come to find out, many of our viewers said, you know, we look for you on YouTube and you weren't there. It said the live stream was canceled because it violated YouTube's mysterious standards that nobody will tell. Well, we actually really know why this happened. And we caught you. Yep. If you are listening, we have a really scummy competitor. And our competitor, we believe, but you know, we gotta get a subpoena out on this. We believe complained and got it taken down. No reason, of course, nobody reviews this. And of course, these big tech tyrants like YouTube, you know, Google, Alphabet, whatever you want to call them, you know, they can do whatever the hell they want. So you don't have any recourse. They have no duty to tell you anything. But this is the world we lived in. I talk about it a lot. But we will get to that. So you can watch our live stream on Facebook, on all the usual places. It streamed to many of them. And we will be streaming again next Sunday. So we hope you'll join us. And hopefully you will see us on YouTube. But if not, you'll see us on Facebook. And who knows? It's just absolutely crazy out there. But we'll also stick it on the YouTube channel as a replay so you can watch it then. But we love to get your questions. So please keep them coming. JasonHartman.com/ask when all else fails. JasonHartman.com/ask. You can ask your questions there. Okay, so these charts, before we get to Dan Millman, and they are really interesting. So you look at building permits, and I'm looking at a chart that goes back to 2005. Talk about compared to what as a reference point. And the chart is just astronomical in 2005. Now, this is a monthly chart, okay? And so it's for a long period, but you see the way this is up and down, up and down, up and down. And what's interesting about this, and now people, of course, are copying me, but I stated maybe in February, I think it was, which is years ago in pandemic years, that we would have a modified square root recovery. Everybody was asking about the V shape, the L shape, the W, the U shape recovery. What's it going to be? Well, Jason Hartman said modified square root. And now, what do you know? That's what you see in the media. People talking about the square, they call it the square root recovery. I call it the modified square root. Because if you look at a square root sign, it goes from moving along its plane, then it goes down like a V, then it comes up higher than it was before. But as I've said, I think the economy comes back to lower than it was before. I think we are moving into a time of contraction, prolonged contraction. I think we will see, we will wake up from this to a smaller economy. And that's the way it's going to be. So my investing strategy has adjusted for that. And that's what I'm sharing with you. That's what we're sharing at our upcoming Meet the Masters conference. And by the way, thanks to so many of you for buying tickets. You are just loving that event. And it hasn't even happened yet. But we appreciate your faith in us. And we're going to do our best to deliver a fantastic event for you. Really excited about our 22nd anniversary conference, but our first virtual conference ever. Very exciting. And so that's coming up. JasonHartman.com/masters for your tickets to that. So this chart, it looks like a modified square root recovery, actually, looking back at it, because it bottomed out right in late 2008. Now, this is building permits, so there are many other indicators, of course. And then, you know, it sort of bumped along the bottom. And then 2011, it started going up, 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 but never as high as it was before. And then when the plandemic began, now, did they plan for the plandemic to begin at the exact time, the scamdemic? We'll see. I don't know if I totally believe that, by the way. I'm just being sensational. I think, you know, look, I think there's an in-between. I think the virus is definitely real. I definitely think it's worse than the flu. It has a higher R-naught factor, et cetera, et cetera. I've talked about all this stuff. But sometimes the cure is worse than the disease, as the old saying goes. And I think this might be one of those times. But we saw building permits plummet back to the level they were in early 2014. And that's what we saw. But now they're coming back up. And they are back up to the level that they first exceeded in about 2015, I have to estimate because not every year on this is on the chart. So you kind of have to estimate. They're like 3-year increments. And you can definitely see that the builders are trying to meet the demand, and the demand is exceptional. There is tons of demand for this wonderful suburban housing where people have space. The same is true pretty much of housing starts. That chart is different looking, but in the near term, the short term, recent times, it's pretty similar. Okay, so look at what else I want to tell you. Now, this is interesting, and this is from the Federal Reserve, and this chart posted in the Wall Street Journal shows weakness in multifamily housing. So when you look at recent building permit activity in structures of one unit, a single family home, well, that would also include condos, but they're mostly single family homes. So one unit building permits versus building permits for structures with five or more units. And this chart shows a widening chasm, a huge gap, where you see the single family units, that building permit activity is way up, but the multifamily, it is down. What does that tell us? It tells us that the builders, the investors, the people who are considering multifamily housing projects have had second thoughts about them. And they were high. Those permits, not too long ago, I'll estimate looking at this chart, like December of 2019, not long ago at all, very high, much lower now and on the downswing. Whereas you see single family doing the opposite, that being on the upswing. So that means that they're catching on to that trend. And then this other chart shows the permit situation for single family housing without the usual seasonal adjustments. Residential construction remains robust. That's the commentary in the Wall Street Journal today. Okay, that's today's Wall Street Journal. And it basically shows the differences in the single family, single unit building permit activity, and this chart is like all over the board because it shows 2013 on up to 2020. But what it shows without any hesitation is a dramatic, literally a hockey stick shape up, 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 up. When that was down in March and April, that is a hockey stick up now. So the builders will not meet the demand. They cannot meet the demand for affordable housing, but they are trying to meet demand. Now, remember, the type of properties they're constructing are expensive properties. I mean, not really expensive, but everything is higher than the typical workforce housing. And even the upper level of that housing, they just don't build that anymore. They don't build it, okay, because they can't build it. The construction costs are simply too high. It's just not available, which means for you, if you already own that property, if you've been buying with us for the last several years, congratulations, you've done great. So congratulations. And if you are buying properties from us now, congratulations again, because you are in a very good position. Also, this week, we'll talk about some of these moving surveys, and it is unbelievable how many people are either already moving or planning to move in the next 6 months, and you can ride that wave to profitability. So congratulations, investors. You can see properties at jasonhartman.com. You can reach out, get an investment counselor through that website, or you know, maybe you meet them at our upcoming virtual Meet the Masters event, or maybe if you're in the United States, just call us toll-free at 1-800-HARTMAN, and we're happy to help you with your plan. We're doing it for an awful lot of people right now, and we'd be happy to help you design a plan for diversification, for prudent investing, a conservative plan that makes sense with properties that make sense the day you buy them. That's what we do. That's what we're here for. There are copycats out there, but we are the original. We've been doing this the longest, and we have the most experience, bar none. There's nobody more experienced than yours truly and my team. There are lots of fakers, lots of copycats, but we are the original, like Coca-Cola. We're the real thing. Okay. Without further ado, let's get to Dan Millman, and this is a 10th show, so again, we're talking about a topic of general interest, not all financial. Tomorrow, we'll be back with all the financial stuff for you and the rest of the week, and don't miss our analysis of some of these moving surveys this week. I think it's going to be very enlightening for you. Okay, here we go with returning guest, Dan Millman. It's my pleasure to welcome back one of my favorite authors, and that is Dan Millman. I originally discovered his work in The Way of the Peaceful Warrior, a book that changes lives, a great book and a great movie, a very popular work, and you've probably heard of it. But he's the author of many books. In fact, he's coming up on his 18th book, and today we'll touch on some of those, including The Life You Were Born to Live, A Guide to Finding Your Life Purpose, The Peaceful Warrior, The Hidden School, The Four Principles of Life, The Creative Compass, and obviously topical issues as they're going on today. Dan, welcome back. How are you?
Thanks, Jason. It's always good to visit with you.
Yeah. And you're coming to us from really one of the epicenters of this whole thing, which is New York, right? I believe you live in New York, don't you?
Yes. Of course, not only that, but actually Brooklyn, New York, which is even more active in terms of this current problem than Manhattan.
Yeah.
So yes, we are definitely in it. But I have two daughters and their husbands and grandkids living here, and we're all well thus far, following common sense protocols.
Dan, you know, I remember, and I've been reading and hearing about this for a while, but I remember, I think it was last year, that I heard a news story that the British government created a new ministry within their government to just address the loneliness problem. And technology, as much as it brings us together, it also separates us. And it's a strange world we're living in nowadays, current events notwithstanding, you know, but you go out anywhere and people are seemingly together, but they're all looking at their phones. So I don't know if they're together or not. And I'll tell you an interesting experience I had. I was at a conference a few months back, and I stayed at a hotel that was in a very Amish community. And I went into a restaurant, this huge restaurant with hundreds of people. And I only saw, as I walked through the restaurant, Dan, I only saw one person looking at their phone. Because it was an Amish restaurant, right?
Right.
And you know, they don't really engage in technology very much. And I asked my Amish waitress about it. And, you know, she told me she has a smartphone and it was an Android phone and she uses it and so forth. And you know, I just kind of asked her about all that. And, you know, it seemed like people were actually carrying on conversations. What a novel idea at the restaurant, right? And,
yes.
And now that we have this pandemic, I mean, this is just isolating. I mean, isolation, social distancing, those are the buzzwords of our time now. What are people going to do? How is this going to affect us in the longer term?
Well, I have a couple of comments that hopefully people maybe haven't heard yet about this whole topic. Well, you know, you mentioned just being in that Amish, mostly Amish restaurant and how it was different. It reminds me of my friend Swami Beyondananda. He's sort of a New Age comedian. And he said he went to a breatharian restaurant. And these are people who don't eat food at all,
right.
You know, this in the joke. And
I don't think that works very well, by the way, but go ahead.
No. He said, of course, there was no food, but the atmosphere was wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm just relating to your topic how,
sure.
Different restaurants, different populations behave differently. But there's something much bigger picture here. Let me share a story with you before I get to my major point. When I was a professor at Oberlin College in Ohio, in the physical education department, one of my colleagues, fellow teachers in that department, was named Tommy Smith. Now, many people remember Tommy Smith, even if they don't remember the name right away. In the 1968 Olympics, he was the Olympic champion in the 400 meters. And he was a black athlete, and he and John Carlos were the two people in that iconic photo from the 1968 Olympics where they were on the victory stand raising their arm, their fist, a gloved fist over their heads. Do you remember that image?
I don't.
Well, I think maybe perhaps people in the younger generation may not, but it's really an iconic image. It's almost like the people sticking the flag up at Iwo Jima and so on.
Right.
And the reason I mentioned Tommy is he grew up in an extremely impoverished environment. And one day I was doing this yoga thing way back when in mid-70s, and we were doing a 7-day fast. So we weren't eating for 7 days, just on water. And I mentioned that just in passing to Tommy, that I wasn't eating for 7 days. And he looked at me completely puzzled and said, "Dan, why would anybody not want to not eat on purpose?" Because for him, it was not a thing you do voluntarily. They didn't have enough to eat. So he couldn't understand why I would volunteer not to eat for 7 days. It was foreign to him. Now, you might wonder, well, where is Dan going with this? What does it have to do with loneliness? It has everything to do with it, because Tommy was pointing out there's a huge psychological difference between not being able to eat because there's no food and choosing not to eat. And in fact, we see people in prisons who are involuntarily isolated from other people in the same way. They call it solitary confinement. And they say it's one of the most cruel punishments, because we have basic needs as human beings that we don't notice until we don't get to fulfill them. So, you know, most people don't think about the need to eat that much because they have enough to eat. But when they don't, then they think about it and they realize how much it's a need. How about air? You know, hold your breath for a while until it becomes uncomfortable. We don't think about it. We take it for granted, breathing, until we can't for whatever reason or have difficulty with it. So it's a huge difference. You know, Joan Baez, the folk singer, once said, "I'm not for voluntary poverty. I'm against involuntary poverty." Mm-hmm. So psychologically, the same punishment, that solitary confinement among prisoners or inmates, there are monks who voluntarily are in the same situation. They live in little cells and they're alone for long, long periods of time. But the difference, again, psychologically, is one is voluntary, one is involuntary.
Okay, what does that mean to us?
What we call loneliness, mm-hmm. What does that mean? We could call it solitude. We could call it peace and quiet. It's something that we begin to appreciate being with people. So most of us, you know, it's like, oh man, all these people on the street, it's crowded under normal circumstances. But now we start to appreciate. You may have found yourself, I don't know what it's like right in your immediate area, but in Brooklyn, you see a lot of people on the streets normally. And now there are actually people saying hello to one another through their masks. Where that doesn't happen. That literally, New Yorkers are known for not saying hi to people because we're overwhelmed with people normally. So I think the plus side of this idea we call loneliness is it's going to help us appreciate the joy of being with other people and crowd and so on that are taking it for granted. Now, that was a roundabout response, but I think it was to make a point, just talking about loneliness and, oh yes, it's too bad people are feeling lonely. Mm-hmm. But they are also appreciating the connection with other people.
Dan, so certainly I agree. You know, we appreciate things more when we don't have them. When we, you know, for you, the blind who once could see, the bell tolls for the great Rush song, by the way. But it's also a lesson in life, right? And so we appreciate that stuff, and that's important. My question is, though, what do we do about it? Or is this something we need to fix, or is it something we need to adjust too, I guess?
Well, there is another principle that constraints breed creativity. Mm-hmm. For example, anybody can sit down and write a prose poem. Mm-hmm. They can just write some nice words and maybe they rhyme. But if they're given the assignment to write a haiku poem, you know, the Japanese poetry, mm-hmm. that has to be done in 3 lines with 5 syllables in the first line, the 7 syllables in the second, and 5 in the third, that is constrained, and that brings out our creativity. Mm-hmm. So writing a haiku absolutely is going to stimulate that. And so when you say, what do we do about people feeling lonely, people are already doing things about it. Mm-hmm. They're doing their very best to connect with people, as you say, through whether it's phones or screens. Can you imagine what it would have been like if we didn't have the internet and this pandemic had started?
Sure.
I personally don't. It would be a nightmare.
Yeah.
But people are connecting. Right. They're connecting as best they can, out the windows, yelling for, you know, at 7 p.m. for the health workers and first responders. People are connecting with old friends. By text, have you found yourself doing this? Text messages and even more than normal.
Right.
Just to check in with relatives. So I think we are doing things about it in response to that felt need to connect with other people.
Okay, so just to back up a little bit before the pandemic, right? I'd already been studying this issue. I've been pretty interested in this issue because I think it is a really a pressing global problem. And before current events, I remember listening to a news story where a woman, an older woman, was talking about how sometimes she just goes to the store. She doesn't need to buy anything. She just wants to talk to someone. She just wants to talk to the clerk. And I was so sad when I heard that. I mean, that's terrible. You know, so this is a problem that's much bigger than current events, although I think current events have exacerbated it for sure. Anything you can speak to. And with that comes a sense of anxiety, too. So maybe you want to blend that into the conversation. And maybe it can't be fixed. Maybe it's just something that needs to be managed. And certainly all the technology that you mentioned, yes, people are using that and that's great. But, you know, that doesn't completely solve the problem, does it?
Well, look, life is a series of problems that we have to solve. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what comes up. It's daily life. It's a form of spiritual weight training. Right. If you don't lift any weights, you don't get stronger.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
Lessons emerge from these. Any difficulty, whenever there's an emotional charge, there's a lesson to be learned. And so when we're facing these constraints, this situation, which is pretty much unprecedented in most of our lifetimes, mm-hmm. there are many lessons that emerge. You know, the analogy I draw is with athletes. Mm-hmm. People who are skilled athletes, I've never seen a single skilled athlete coordinated, fast, quick, with balance and rhythm and timing. I've never seen anyone who we would call dumb. You know, that whole stereotype about dumb jocks? Mm-hmm. Actually, athletes have smart nervous systems. That's why they train. Mm-hmm. And so they may not be academically motivated, all of them, in the traditional sense, but they're not dumb.
Right.
People who are coordinated, so because the nervous system's connected up through the brainstem to the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the same way, but athletes learn lessons about life. They learn spiritual or universal laws through their training, the law of process, how we get results through step-by-step learning. Athletes learn that you can't control the outcomes, but you can control your efforts. And by making a good effort, you increase the odds of getting the outcome you want. Athletes know this at the cell level. Now, they wouldn't recite it necessarily. The point is, they learn about the present moment, the law of presence. Athletes who are involved in play and performance and competition aren't thinking about what they're going to do tomorrow. They are focused on the present moment, that pure awareness. So the point is, they learn all these lessons, and yet they don't know they're learning the lessons.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're so focused on the external rewards, the games, the winning, the losing, the points, the times. So they don't know they're learning it. And we're in exactly the same position right now. We are learning lessons every day about ourselves, about our politicians, about the state of the world, about medical readiness, not just the obvious ones in the struggles we've had to keep up with masks and hand sanitizer. And those are the obvious big lessons. But there are so many emerging about ourselves, about our families, people who are two or three kids, and they're doing homeschooling. So they're learning about themselves. Talk about a leap in self-knowledge. So much will come out of this, just mm-hmm. like it does for athletes. But we may have to reflect on it for years mm-hmm. when we realize all that we've learned and changed. So I think this is well, you know, there's an old Serbian proverb. Two men looked out of prison bars. One saw mud and the other saw stars. Now, yeah. Both mud and stars exist. We can't ignore them. Right. But where do we want to put our attention?
Mm-hmm.
So I think we can focus on also the strength and the resilience, the perspective mm-hmm. that is going to come out of this period.
Sure.
But meanwhile, we're in it. So right. we're like the, you know, there are three mysteries in this world: air to the birds, water to the fish, and humanity to itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because we're immersed in the moment.
You know, the context of our lives, it drives so much, yet we don't necessarily notice it. And that more appropriately, maybe the context of our mind, our mindset, right? It determines so many things. And that's a great point. So, you know, there's this concept in economics called hedonic adjustments. And mm-hmm. and they use that to manipulate, some would say, and I would too, the consumer price index and to hide inflation that's really there. And they say, well, the new computer you got or the new car you got is so much better than the old one. Even though you paid $3,000 for that new computer, it's twice as good as the last one. So in real dollars, it was really only $1,500, right? Like there's this adjustment. But the reason I bring that up, Dan, is not to talk about economics, but to talk about our mindset and the context in which we live and our expectations, because we as humans hedonically adjust. And hedonics is just obviously the root word is hedonism, right? Pleasure seeking, like how much pleasure do we get out of a thing? So you mentioned spiritual weightlifting, and I really liked that point. So that's sort of an adjustment. Like you talked about the athletes that are sort of, you didn't say this, but I would say it, in the zone, right? And they're just doing their thing and their muscle memory is learning things, right? Their nervous system is just automatically learning things, sort of even without trying. Well, what are we learning now? You know, are we spiritually weightlifting now if we're stuck at home with no one around us? And, you know, people are in very different environments around the world. You know, some people are in little shacks. Some people are in crowded places. Some people are with big families. It's all different for everybody.
Oh, it is. And that's important to keep in mind. We tend to think the whole world is like in our situation, but
not.
For the homeless, for example, mm-hmm. what that's like.
Yeah.
So yes, everyone has various different challenges. And yet, it's been said many times before, I don't mean to be too cliche, but we are in this together. This is worldwide. It's much more prevalent and intense in high density areas like New York City, for example, than it is some spread out areas where most everybody drives places in cars, goes inside, comes out, gets in their car, mm-hmm. where you don't have public transportation, that sort of thing as much. But we all know sensory deprivation experiments that have been done. I once did an experiment in which I went into a bare room with just a mattress. I brought in no books, no entertainment of any kind. This is even before smartphones mm-hmm. of any kind. And it was part of a training I was going through. I'm writing about it in a memoir I'm working on right now. But basically, in that room, I went in Friday night. I had a sheet over the window. There was no view. It was dimly lit. And I sat in that room doing essentially nothing till Monday morning. Mm-hmm. And that is much more challenging than many people
sure.
might guess.
I believe you. Yeah,
Just,
well, you were basically in solitary confinement. Self-imposed.
I was,
yeah.
like the hermit. Right. But I'll tell you, when I came out of there on Monday morning, I was looking at the world, sensing it, smelling it, feeling it, mm-hmm. tasting it with the senses of a young child.
Right.
It's like, wow, look at the sky, look at the trees, look at those people. It was, and it's hard to really convey, but some people have done these isolation tanks, float tanks, where they get into this big tank of water that's body temperature. Their hands are enmeshed in gloves with cotton. They don't feel anything. They can't hear anything. It's soundproof. Right. Yeah. And they start hallucinating after a while.
A lot of those places are, well, opening back up, I guess, around the country.
Yes. Yeah. Well, we're doing this, though, in a sense, whether it's as extreme or not, our lives have all been simplified. Mm-hmm. We're home more of the time, less stimulated. And it actually tunes up our reticular activating system, the RAS, in the brainstem, mm-hmm. where we start to notice the small things again. And in terms of perspective, we're realizing that a lot of the things we thought were so important are small stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And this is big stuff right now, our health, being able to just go to a store. Right. I mean, the other day I remarked to my wife, I am home writing myself, working on the book a lot, but I went out to get some toothpaste and that was the biggest event of my whole day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So again, you have a different sense
of
perspective.
Well, that's like the lonely old lady in that news
yes.
story I was talking about, you know,
yes.
she just so she could have a tiny little conversation with a clerk that, you know, made her feel better. I mean,
exactly. I mean, many elders just going to the doctor is their big event of the week.
Right.
And so sometimes they invent small pains, aches, whatever, not always,
sure.
of course, but just to go to the doctor and talk to them.
Just that's, hey, that's what hypochondriacs do. They know it's an attention getting mechanism, right?
Yeah. But there may be other motives, just lonely.
Yeah,
again,
sure.
to talk to someone and have them give you their attention and caring. So there are so many related topics, but we're learning these lessons today. You know, there's an old proverb, you know, that God comforts the disturbed and disturbs the comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we turn to belief and religion and faith when our foundations are shaking, only to realize it's spirit who's shaking them. So we're all being shaken up, and I'm pointing up right now.
Mm-hmm.
We're being shaken upward, and we will eventually get past this, and not entirely even, but hopefully if we get a vaccine in the next year or so,
mm-hmm.
if we're lucky, then we can treat this as just one of those things like the flu, because we'll have a vaccination, we might have treatments, but right now, humanity is going through a transformation, and no one promised it would always be pleasant.
So some people are using this time in creative ways. Some are using it to become better people. Some are studying. You know, there are people that did sort of menial jobs before that are learning how to do computer programming now and, you know, taking all these courses online and just bettering themselves. And that's great. And they're exercising. They're doing all the good things, right, that really in the long term make us all better and feel better. And others, sadly, are eating potato chips, drinking beer, and sitting on the sofa watching TV all day.
Yes. You
know, how can we best use this time? And not just how can we best use it? Because I think most people actually know the answer to that question, even if they're not practicing it. But how do we get ourselves to use this time well? Maybe is the better question.
Yeah. And I would, in response to that, I'm going to read a very brief note.
Well, we can watch The Way of the Peaceful Warrior or read it and ask Socrates. But,
yeah. Well, that's one approach. Right. But I think a good reminder, look, many people in the past commuted to work, and they had long commutes, mm-hmm. and sometimes heavily trafficked commutes.
Right.
And some people would just be frustrated, traffic, honking their horn, maybe listening to music, but others learned a language during their commute. They learned a new language. They listened to favorite books, and they were almost disappointed when they finally got there because they wanted to hear what happened next in the book. Mm-hmm. So we all make these choices, as you just pointed out. But there's a saying, to progress toward our goals, we can choose one of two methods. And the first method I'm about to describe to you is very popular, but I recommend the second method. Here's the first one. Find a way to quiet your mind, create empowering beliefs, raise your self-esteem, and practice positive self-talk to find your focus and affirm your power, to free your emotions and visualize positive outcomes, so that you can develop the confidence to generate the courage, to find the determination to make the commitment, to feel sufficiently motivated to do whatever it is you need to do.
Phew. Sounds like any number of motivational seminars I've been to.
Doesn't it? Doesn't
yeah.
it? Well, would you like to know the second method?
Yeah, go for it.
You can just do it.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Because life is always going to come down to what we do. Our lives, if we look at it very realistically, our life right now has been shaped by what we have done in the past.
Uh-huh.
Not what we thought, not positive thoughts, not what we felt, because emotions change all the time. Mm-hmm. We have much less control over what we feel or what we think in any given moment than what we actually do.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to come down to that. Now, it's not as if we have to make every moment count. That's crazy making.
Mm-hmm.
There are times we need to kick back, take a nap, watch a video, relax, chill out, space out. But other times, it's like, what is my goal? Mm-hmm. You know, there was a Japanese psychiatrist once who had three really good bits of advice. He said, first, accept whatever thoughts and feelings you have as natural to you in that moment. Whether they're positive or negative, they're natural to you in the moment. Accept them. You don't have to fix them, change them, run from them, deny them. Just accept them. They're there. As in meditation, just notice them. The second thing is, what is your purpose? What do you want to get done? And the third is, do whatever you need to get that, you know, in line with your purpose. Not in line with some philosophy, but in line with what do you want to get done? So when people are day by day, they're home most of the time, what do they want to get done? Is it cleaning the house? Is it doing the dishes? Is it organizing? Is it writing a book, writing some music, doing some creative endeavor, painting a picture, drawing something? Anybody with a pencil and paper can become an artist. Just draw. So there are different ways to pass our time. And the question really becomes this, and it might be a good one to kind of wind down on, which is, what do I want to look back on 5 years or 10 years from now? How did I treat this period?
Mm-hmm.
What use did I make of it? Because as we all know, we can't control. You know, life comes at us in waves of change. I've been saying this for decades, but now it's really hitting home. We can't control or predict those waves, but we can learn to surf them
mm-hmm.
yeah. and make the best use of them.
Yeah, good stuff. Dan, give out your website.
Website, for those who are curious, is peacefulwarrior.com.
Dan Millman, thanks again for joining us.
My pleasure, Jason.
Thank you so much for listening. Please be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes. Be sure to check out the show's specific website and our general website, hartmanmedia.com, for appropriate disclaimers and terms of service. Remember that guest opinions are their own, and if you require specific legal or tax advice or advice in any other specialized area, please consult an appropriate professional. And we also very much appreciate you reviewing the show. Please go to iTunes or Stitcher Radio or whatever platform you're using and write a review for the show. We would very much appreciate that. And be sure to make it official and subscribe so you do not miss any episodes. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode.